Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics.
Sean Payton was horrible in clock management. That should never be the case with this New Orleans Saints team.
Well, we're waiting.
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Welcome to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini, joined by Vinny Rondinelli as we are every Tuesday. It's Football Tuesday here on Drive Time Sports. Vinny, we've been waiting for this week for a while. It's Super Bowl.
Yeah, yeah, Super Bowl Tuesday, man. It's going to be awesome. Exciting. Great game. Great matchup.
At the beginning of the playoffs, I can't say I'm surprised. I did predict this at the beginning of the playoffs.
Yeah.
I was teetering back.
You called
it. I did say the winner of the Chargers-Patriots game would represent the AFC. I felt pretty strongly about that. I thought the Rams would get out of the NFC. So I'm not surprised by the matchup, but I definitely like what we're having. I know you and I did talk about this a little bit last week, and I'm sure we'll dive into it a little bit later on in the show. X's and O's. Sean McVay, he's the offensive guru in Los Angeles, going up against another rather young coach in Josh McDaniels, offense versus offense. And regardless of what anyone tells me, it is Bill Belichick versus Wade Phillips defensively.
I mean, absolutely.
That's what this boils down to in my mind. I mean, we're
absolutely
talking about one of the greatest football coaches ever against one of, I think when his career is said and done, Wade Phillips is going to rank among the top defensive coordinators to ever coach in the NFL.
Absolutely. So, absolutely. A very underrated guy.
Yeah.
You know, they point to the head coaching, and he had some success. He did not flop as a head coach. He did have some success. But you talk about a guy that's been dominant defensively for, I think, his first job, 1981, working for Bumaruski, working for his dad. So this dude's been around and had success everywhere through all different types of football. Styles of football. I mean, he's going on four decades, so very impressive. Wade Phillips should be noted as, you know, Buddy Ryan, Wade Phillips, you know, Bill Belichick as defensive coordinators. They were the cream of the crop of all time.
Son of a bum.
The old Bumaruski, yeah. So, and he's done it all. And he's been in a lot of different places and had success everywhere he's went. So I know I loved him in San Diego. I tell you, I'm a Chargers homer. Everybody knows it. And I loved him in San Diego.
Bronco
great guy.
Fans loved
and
him
a
in
great
Denver.
Guy.
He is a great guy.
He's a wonderful guy. And the personalities this week, I think, is what makes this so entertaining to Jordan. Because you have these personalities where, you know, Belichick, as a football coach, is just so dry and so simple.
Whoever comes up plays on Sunday.
And Wade Phillips is just awesome.
Right.
Yeah, McVay's a young, bubbly guy. McDaniels, young, bubbly guys. These are younger guys. And they're both matched up against older guys. You know, your McDaniels and half Wade Phillips' age.
Yeah.
When they go to battle, and then you have Belichick and Flores against McVay, who's half of his age. I mean, this is going to be interesting. They're just so different. So cool. That's going to be a cool matchup. Very cool.
We will talk more, of course, about Super Bowl 53 a little bit later on in the show. Also today, we have to talk a little local sports. Coming up tomorrow night, we will continue the Region 15 basketball season on KOAL. The Emory Spartans will travel on the road to take on the Manti Templars. Heartbreaking loss for Emory this past Friday, falling on the road to the Richfield Wildcats by 5 points in a game that was back and forth. So we will talk to Coach Todd Jeffs about that during the local sports segment on the show today. And, of course, we'll give you the recap of everything that happened over the weekend once again and what's in store tonight, because we have girls basketball, kind of a down week for high school sports. Friday and Saturday is going to be big for wrestling. Outside of that, it's pretty much just basketball this week. So we will talk about that a little bit later on in the show. As far as the national headlines go, kind of a slower day, and I'm okay with that. Yesterday it was dominated by Anthony Davis and trade talks in the NBA. I guess the big story today, you got to move over to the world of MMA, where UFC lightweight champion John Jones has been cleared to compete in the state of Nevada. Vinny, I know you're not a big combat sport. You're not a big MMA guy, are you?
No, not really. My brother is, so I know a little bit about it.
This drives me absolutely nuts that this guy, John Jones, and I recognize him as one of the greatest mixed martial artists of all time. He really is. He's that spectacular. But the Nevada State Athletic Commission today voted unanimously in favor of granting him a one-fight conditional license, which will keep him eligible to compete even if he tests positive for the specific banned M3 steroid. Okay, this is what drives me absolutely bonkers.
That's a license to cheat.
It is. The decision was rendered 1 month after the UFC moved an entire event from Las Vegas to Los Angeles at the last minute due to concerns over his license in Nevada. Okay, he's scheduled to defend his title against Anthony Smith in the main event of UFC 235 March 2nd at T-Mobile. The Nevada State Athletic Commission, who has been under scrutiny not only for MMA, but also for boxing. You go back to the Mayweather-McGregor fight, where a Nevada State Athletic Commission rule is, if you fight at 154 or above, you cannot wear anything less than 10-ounce gloves in the ring, for good reason. Mayweather and McGregor said, man, we're going to fight at 154, and we're going to wear 8-ounce gloves. The Nevada State Athletic Commission said, okay, go right ahead. I got a problem with that.
Hey, money talks.
I got a problem with that. Yeah. You know, not only did they commission a guy who had never been in a professional boxing match ever to face one of the all-time greats, they allowed them to move down a weight in gloves, which it doesn't sound like a big difference, but it is.
It's a huge difference.
And so the Nevada State Athletic Commission, that's just one of many things. I could go on an entire hour of why I hate the Nevada State Athletic Commission.
They're a mess.
They are a mess. So they licensed Jones for this event on the condition that his level of M3 metabolite stays consistent with where it's been in the past 18 months. They're going to conduct their own testing of Jones during that time as much as 2 times a day. You said it, money talks.
Money talks. That's a license to cheat. And hey, money talks. John Jones draws the viewers, man. MMA people love him. My brother's a big MMA fan. And, you know, the guy's spectacular. What a family of athletes, too. He's got two brothers. I think Arthur's not in the NFL right now.
He was.
He had an injury, but Chandler Jones is amazing.
Yeah.
Arthur Jones had a nice run there, and some injuries hit him, so he got three professional athletes. Not just professional athletes, very good professional athletes.
Right.
At different sizes. You have Arthur who's playing D-tackle, yeah. Chandler playing outside linebacker, John Jones is MMA, and I don't know his weight. I think it's what?
Just over 200 pounds, so.
Yeah, and I think Arthur at his playing weight was 310, and Chandler sits in a 255, 260, so. Totally different body types, totally different positions, and they're all dominant athletes. It's a pretty impressive family.
It is. Yeah, when you think about it, it's it's pretty ridiculous. Again, John Jones, he will be scheduled to fight in Las Vegas March 2nd. Let's move over to the NBA. We do have a slate of games tonight. Quiet after the Anthony Davis trade talks picked up yesterday. A little bit more quiet today. 5 o'clock hour, Washington at Cleveland. The Pistons play host to the Bucks. We get OKC on the road against Orlando when Chicago travels to meet Brooklyn. 6 o'clock hour, national TV game. 6 p.m., it's Houston playing host to the New Orleans Pelicans without Anthony Davis. Phoenix will travel on the road to take on San Antonio at 6:30, and then we get the Sixers and the Lakers nightcap, second game of a doubleheader on TNT. Again, coming up, some local sports. We'll recap everything happening in the local area, plus Coach Todd Jeffs will join us over the phone, and then we're going to talk Super Bowl 53 because it is Football Tuesday. It's all straight ahead right here on this Tuesday edition of Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. Coming up this Friday and Saturday, the Emory High School and Carbon High School wrestling teams will participate in the divisional meets that sets the stage for the state championships next week. Emory is fresh off of a terrific performance this past Thursday against the Duchesne Eagles. Yesterday on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, we were joined by head coach Kirk Christiansen, who talked a little bit about Thursday's performance and also about the regime this week for his team ahead of the divisional tournament.
Yeah, we had a good time. We wrestled really tough. We won a few more matches than we did last time we wrestled them, and we were able to come up with the win. Today, tomorrow, probably real, real tough practices. You know, work on just getting that little bit extra fit and a lot of live wrestling. And the following 2 days, Wednesday, Thursday, we'll work on a lot of technique.
The Spartans will travel to the Sevier Valley Center in Richfield. And again, that'll be this Friday and Saturday. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We will continue to bring you updates on the Emory and Carbon Wrestling Squad this weekend as they become available. Now we take a look at the schedule today for high school sports, and the Emory Lady Spartans will return to the court as they participate in one of their final two home games of the season. Emory will welcome in the Manti Templars, and so far this year, the Lady Spartans have been nothing short of dominant in division play. As it sits right now, Emory is at the top of Region 15 with a perfect record of 8-0. They've outscored their opponents 538-303. Richfield is in second place at 6-2. Manti is at the very bottom of the region at 1-8. This will mark the second and final meeting of the season between the two teams. Emory won the first one back on January 8th by a final score of 77-34. Start time for tonight's contest is scheduled for 7 p.m. Now we take a look at Carbon High School because the Lady Dinos will also be back in action tonight as they take on Mazer Prep. Carbon is sitting 9-0 in Region 14 play, and they too have showcased dominance. They've outscored their opponents 479-238. Juab is in second place at 6-2. Tonight's opponent, Mazer Prep, is in last at 0-8. Start time for tonight's contest for the Lady Dinos is scheduled for 7 p.m. Following tonight's contest, they'll take the remainder of the week off before returning to the court next Tuesday to take on Union, and then they'll wrap up the regular season at home against American Leadership next Thursday. We move over to junior college athletics, and this past weekend, the USU Eastern women's softball team traveled on the road to Henderson, Nevada, where they participated in the first weekend under head coach Ryan Smith. The Lady Eagles came back with a record of 1-4 following five games. The lone win came against Pima Community College by a final score of 9-8. The team suffered losses to Eastern Arizona, Central Arizona, Arizona Western, and Yavapai College. The Lady Eagles will return to the softball diamond this weekend. Up first, it's a trip to Yuma, Arizona, where they will play Phoenix College. They'll also meet Eastern Arizona, Central Arizona, Arizona Western, Chandler Gilbert, Glendale Community College, and Yavapai. Stay tuned for continuous coverage on the USU Eastern Women's Softball Squad. And today on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, we'll continue to break down Super Bowl 53 featuring the Los Angeles Rams and the New England Patriots, which will air live on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 a.m. this Sunday. Live coverage will begin at noon. Kickoff is scheduled for 4:15. Outside of that, we will catch up with Emory High School boys basketball coach Todd Jeffs. That'll be today on KOAL's Drive Time Sports beginning at 4 p.m. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
We're back on Drive Time Sports. Football Tuesday here on KOAL, 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. But we're going to break away from football to focus on the local sports front for just a moment. This past Friday, the Emory Spartans suffered a tough loss on the basketball court, falling to the Richfield Wildcats 65-60. And that increases the importance of tomorrow night's game against a very good Manti Templar squad on the road. Joining us right now to talk about that, we have head coach Todd Jeffs of the Emory Spartans right now. Coach, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Jordan.
Always look forward to it, Coach. Unfortunately, we're talking about a game where we came out on the wrong side of the scoreboard this past Friday, but it was highly entertaining. A 65-60 loss to the Richfield Wildcats. Unfortunate, Coach, because this was a game where if Emory comes out on the winning side of the scoreboard, a region championship is very, very possible as we go into the final four games of the season. Unfortunately, with this loss, that kind of puts that out of the question.
Well, I think you're exactly right. I think we're playing right now not for a region championship. We're playing to try to get as high a seeding as we possibly can so we get as lower of an opponent in that Orem play-in game. And we understand that, and I talked to the guys last night in practice about it, and we understand we're in a situation where we're playing for seeding, and we just got to get better every day of practice. Every game we go out, we got to improve. And it's unfortunate for the loss down there at Richfield, but at the same time, it's encouraging knowing that we took one of the best teams in 3A right to the wire on their court, where things didn't go our way at all the fourth quarter. Our leading scorer, Kyson Stilson, fouls out with 4 minutes to go, and we don't get the benefit of any call down the wire, and actually give possessions away on unfortunate situations. And we still have end up with a two-point lead late in the game. I think a minute or so to go, we had a two-point lead with the ball. And so there's some encouraging things to take from it. The loss was painful and unfortunate, but, we pick ourselves up and move on.
You mentioned Kyson Stilson, and last week you and I had a conversation about just an incredible tear he was on, scoring 46, 32, and 40, if I remember correctly, were the three games that he had. Coach, when I go back and I look at this game, he went toe-to-toe with arguably the best athlete in 3A, and that's Emmett Hafen. I don't think he's even near the best basketball player in the state, but he is one of the best athletes in the state. And there were several man-to-man situations in this game with Kyson and Emmett. Outside of that, what was the cause for Kyson's struggles, I guess, offensively? What did Richfield do to kind of adjust to the scoring tear that he's been on?
Well, I think you hit it right on the head. That Hafen kid is a fiercely competitive kid. He just really, I thought he really took that challenge and just did everything he could to limit Tyson's touches and to limit his opportunities at the rim. And even the shots that he made were, highly contested. And then the refs let him get away with a lot of stuff. He dinked Cade in the forehead on it with an elbow, and he's just, he's a real scrappy, competitive, fiercely tough kid. And when you let a kid like that get away with some of the stuff he got away with, we saw the results. And so, and then Kyson just he struggled a little bit. He got some really good open looks at threes and missed them. And, you're going to have a night like that. And I thought our other guy stepped up and really covered for him well. And, did a nice job just playing, knowing that he wasn't having a great game.
Yeah, Cade Brazier was great, and you mentioned the injury that he suffered off of the elbow from Hafen. It didn't seem to really affect his aggressiveness in this game, Coach. He knocks down 6 3-point shots, finishes with 23 points. I think every team in the state would love to have a 1-2 punch. With Cade back healthy and as confident as ever, I think it's obvious that the squad has that 1-2 punch, maybe even a 1-2-3 punch if you consider Brax, who also reached double figures.
Yeah, we're still trying to kind of feel our way through with maybe some shot distribution with Cade getting a bunch of shots here the last couple of games. He's really, we really kind of tried to look for him and get him those 3-point shots. And it's just a matter of time before we blend those kids back together this summer. All three of those kids were just, like you said, that 1-2-3 punch is just tough to overcome for defenses. We're kind of finding a better groove for that and talking about a few things that in shot selection that I think we can improve on. And, one thing we didn't talk about off the air was the fact of how many offensive rebounds we let Richfield get in that game. And they scored, probably 14 points off second chance points, and we got to limit that some too. And, we're outside every time we go out, but we got a lot of fight in us, and we can do better than that.
Yeah, second, third, even fourth chance opportunities against a team like Richfield. And I think you and I agree, Coach, if not one of the best team in 3A. You give a team like that three or four opportunities. I mean, they have five kids on the floor that can shoot the ball from just about anywhere, including the Thalman kid who comes in off of the bench and scores 17 points. You got to limit second chance opportunities, much less third and fourth.
Yeah, exactly, and I don't think we did a really good job with that. That was the one glaring disappointment, after watching the videotape, was just the fact that we didn't rebound as well as we had. And a lot of it was just a lack of going and getting the ball. We were kind of standing around with our hands in our pockets, and Richfield was going and getting it, and we got to have a better effort there.
Again, we're being joined right now by Coach Todd Jeffs of the Emory Spartan Boys Basketball Squad. Coach, I know that non-region play is kind of how you want to prepare for certain situations throughout the year, but if I go back and I take a look at the last two losses from this team, I see a lot of learning experiences. San Juan, you and I talked about the defense, score 100 points and lose. That was a lesson to this team on you got to play defense, you got to come up with stops late in the game. Richfield, you consider that Kyler Wilstead was in foul trouble throughout most of the game. He fouls out early. Kyson Stilson fouls out of the game, and towards the end, Brax Jensen fouls fouls out. I felt like this was a learning experience for some of the role players. They had to step up. And so I know you never want to have a learning experience in a region game, but this one does act as a valuable experience, I think, moving forward.
No, I really think it is, you know, and that's where I've tried to put an emphasis on our kids is to realize that we're still learning and we've still got a great shot at a good run in the state tournament, but we got to continue to get better. We can't just be content with where we're at. We've got to, you know, manage those late game situations a lot better than we have and recognize the situation when you've got a 2-point lead and the ball. From that point in, it's all about ball control, making free throws and taking nothing but layups. And I thought we made a few mistakes there, you know, with that situation in hand. And then, you know, like you said, we've improved defensively. We can still improve. We you know, we're still giving up some layups and we're still giving up some open threes that we need to get a little bit closer to and make sure those kids are crowded and make those shots a little bit tougher. And so we're working on that every day in practice. Our guys have a great attitude. They're, you know, for the most part, they're really getting after it and understanding that we got a great opportunity ahead of us and we just really need to improve day to day.
Let's talk about Wednesday's game, Coach. Road contest against Manti. It's a very tough place to go and play. It just seems in recent memory we haven't had a whole lot of success on the road against Manti. It's a team that's going to run really deep. Coach Shakespeare loves to press the tempo. Did get a victory over this team just a couple of weeks ago, but one of the things that stood out to me is the parity offensively, be it Mason Thompson, be it Dallin Cox or Grady Thompson. I mean, they have a couple of kids that can really score the ball. Travis Thompson as well, a lot of Thompson kids on this team. This is a team that I guess the record doesn't really do it justice. I think this is a pretty good basketball team.
Yeah, it's a really good team. You know, I was looking at, you know, some of their stuff, trying to prepare a game plan for them yesterday, and it's easy to forget, but their last loss was over here against us. So they've, you know, run the table one time through on region play. That means they beat South Sevier and Richfield and San Juan and Grand all in that stretch, and you know they're on a roll right now, and so we've got to go over and do something with them. You know, some of those same things that we were talking about that were lacking in the Richfield game. The one nice thing about playing Manti is they don't have, you know, some of the size that we've seen the last couple of weeks, and so, you know, we're a little bit more evenly matched that way, and that helps us out.
Just looking at points scored, points given up, I mean, Manti and Emory, very similar.
Yeah, they really are. You know, I think it's a little deceiving. Or when you look just straight at the stats, it looks similar. But the way we're getting there and the way they're getting there is quite different. You know, they really want to press and push that up-tempo and let their defense turn into offense with some of those steals. Once they get that going, they're just a different animal. They have a really heightened experience as far as, you know, their energy level is concerned when they get those steals and turn them into quick baskets. And we've got to limit that. We've got to really take care of the basketball and get the shots that we want. And then we got to contest everything that they have. And that's kind of where our focus is, you know, this week so far.
I think anytime we talk about Manti, Coach, defensively, everyone's always going to bring up their full court press and how they can kind of change the game on a dime defensively. That defense can create offense. But if we look at Emory, I thought that the full court press that you put out on the court against Richfield was successful as well. It's not something that I know we talk a lot about, but it says this team, your team's play in the full court press.
Well, I really liked it. I thought that really turned the tide in the fourth quarter. You know, we were down 4 or 5, 6 points, something like that, and jumped into that and ended up with 3 or 4 straight steals and converted them into baskets. And it's not something that we do a lot of, but I feel like we try to use it in spots and use it when it can be effective for us, and it really was that night. And, you know, it kind of turned the tide of events in the fourth quarter. You know, we go from down 4 or 5 to up 3 just in a matter of 5 or 6 possessions, and I thought it was really effective for us.
Coach, last question before I let you go. Coming off a loss against Richfield in the manner that the loss was suffered in, how did practice look on Monday?
Well, Monday we started out a little flat. You know, I don't know if our guys were kind of down or what they had going on, but, you know, it quickly turned into a pretty good practice. The first
20 minutes wasn't so great, and then the last hour and 20 minutes was phenomenal. So, you know, we kind of got walked back up, and I think our guys are a little bit more focused, a little bit more energetic, ready to play.
Coach, it's always a pleasure to talk to you about Emory High School basketball. I really appreciate the time again today. Thank you very much, and we'll see you at the game on Manti and on Wednesday.
Can't wait.
Again, that's Coach Todd Jeffs of the Emory Sport and Boys basketball team. Live coverage of tomorrow night's tilt will begin at 6:30 right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. Now, coming up this Sunday, we have live coverage of Super Bowl 53. That'll begin at noon, and it'll carry you all the way to kickoff at 4:30 when Kevin Harlan brings you the live play-by-play call. We're going to talk more Super Bowl 53 when we return. It's a Tuesday edition of Drive Time Sports right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
I understand you're a real sports fan.
Well, then there's only one answer.
Turn on the radio.
You'll never have to compromise again.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Time to talk Super Bowl 53. Don't forget, we're going to have live coverage beginning at 12 p.m. this Sunday, and then Kevin Harlan of Westwood One will bring you the live play-by-play call beginning at 4 p.m. So if you can't watch the Super Bowl, not everyone can, we definitely have you covered right here on KOAL. Vinny, it's been a long time. Look, the NFC-AFC Championship game over a week ago, I really don't like the off week. In between.
I don't either. It drags on. There's too much hype.
There's a lot of hype. And, this was also something that we talked about yesterday. You have a week to get your game plan in.
Yeah.
You're not practicing to the extent that you were last week this week because of all the hoopla and the media requirements. Yeah, you're having some time to, I guess, kind of fine-tune some things. But at the same time, your game plan has to be in place last week.
Yeah.
Right? So what you thought about and what Bill Belichick wants to implement, what Sean McVay wants to implement, it's been thought about.
They know it now. Yeah, they absolutely.
And you and I were going back and forth during that last commercial break talking about the most interesting aspect of this Super Bowl, and I think we agree. To me, it's the idea of Wade Phillips going up against Bill Belichick. To me, that is the most interesting dynamic in this game.
Absolutely.
I don't think you can overlook that.
No, not at all. And I am excited. You know, and people watch the game for different reasons. You know, people have Super Bowl parties, and they're just there to hang out. They don't watch the game. My mother watches Super Bowl for the commercials. You know, but I'm watching the game different than most people. Me and you are that way. I think the most interesting thing to me is, how does Wade Phillips come out? What's his game plan? Does he go one of two ways? Does he get real physical and take away the first read for Brady to get that monstrous pass rush, that extra second? Does he back off, keep everything in front of him, and make him go 80 yards, 5 yards a pop? What is his plan going to be? Does he stunt or twist? That takes a little longer, but it gets Aaron Donald off a double team maybe. I'm just fascinated to see what Wade Phillips does to, you know, get his players one-on-one. You're not gonna confuse Brady. You're not gonna confuse Belichick or McDaniels. That's out the window. You're not gonna do that. So when you beat him, it's gonna be with execution, and you know, you have a lot of skill. They do. Tlaib can flat play. Aaron Donald might be the best football player on the earth right now. So, you know, you're not gonna fool him. So how do you get him in one-on-ones where your guy's better than their guy? And I'm just fascinated to see what Wade Phillips, how he handles this offense.
I'm curious to see how Bill Belichick handles this as well, because if you go back over the course of the Rams season, to me, the poorest the Rams looked offensively, obviously, would be against the Chicago Bears, okay?
Yep.
Outside of that, it was against the Detroit Lions, right? And who was the defensive coordinator last year?
Yeah, Matty P.
Okay.
Matty P.
So you take a look at what Detroit did in that game so well. And this is something that should scare Ram fans, because you're crazy if you don't think that Bill Belichick and Matt Patricia have had conversations.
Oh, yeah. They've talked a lot.
You're crazy if you don't think so. And when you look at the way the Rams want to do things, outside zone plays all start by looking the same, right? That's what Sean McVay does. They beat you off of the play action, right? What did the Lions do against the Rams? The Rams looked poor through three quarters in that, before it finally became obvious they were the better team talent-wise. That took over. Okay, the Lions aren't the Patriots. So what did Matt Patricia do in that game? Take care of the outside zone blocking. I mean, it's that simple.
Yeah.
Because every play looks the same with Sean McVay. They talk about what a wizard this guy is offensively. Vinny, he's not doing anything that's never happened in the NFL that we haven't seen
before. No, they're just a different wrinkle on the same play. There's a lot of tight formations, too. Mm-hmm. So maybe, you know, that's a great point how you're talking about this. Maybe this McVay opens it up and widens a little bit, puts the Patriot players in space. Because, again, in their front seven, they don't have a dominant player. Dont'a Hightower's a good player. They don't have a dominant player. So for them, it's going to be perfect execution. Do your job. Just like Belichick's preached for years, do your job. But skill-wise, you're better than they are.
So there's no question. The Rams are better than the Patriots.
No doubt about it. 1-53, there's more talent on the L.A. roster. But do your job, which Belichick preaches. Now, Belichick's famous for his way of doing things. How do you say? He's taking somebody away.
Mm-hmm.
So last week it was Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill had one catch in that AFC Championship game, one catch.
Sammy Watkins was brilliant, and they were fine with that.
Yep. So another very interesting thing for me is when we watch this game kick off, Jordan, who does Belichick take away? Does he stack the line and make you throw it? No Gurley, no C.J. Anderson, take the play action away from you because you're in third and longs? Does he stack the run, and that's who he takes away? Does he do what he did with Tyreek Hill? The fastest man on the field this Sunday is going to be who? Brandon Cooks.
Hands down.
He's the fastest guy in the field. Does he double him and take him away and take the, you know, shrink the field for you because you can't take the top off? So I'm just waiting to see what Flores and Belichick have come together, just like with Wade Phillips, what their game plan is against the Rams offense.
If you go back to the Kansas City game defensively, who was the one player for the Patriots that stood out to you? To me, it was Kyle Van Noy.
Yeah, he was good. He looked good in space. He did. Very athletic. Yeah, he looked good. Gilmore did a good job that game, too.
Yeah, Gilmore's been sound all year.
And he's their back seven. So that's going to be an interesting thing. Now, let me ask you, let's play a little game here, Jordan. Oh, an unsung hero people aren't talking about. You think to yourself, from each team, an unsung hero that can really change the game. Somebody they're not thinking about. You know, hey, we know Tom Brady. We know Gurley, Cooks. We know, you know, Edelman. All these guys that are well-known players. But who's the guy you're thinking of that, hey, this guy could change a game and nobody's even thought about?
For the Rams?
For both teams.
To me, it's simple for the Rams. Okay, I go back and I look at the NFC Championship game. Jared Goff had the most important completion of his career in overtime off a blitz where Cam Jordan was right in his face.
Yeah, he was.
They brought a corner blitz. He was able to deliver a pass to Tyler Higbee. Tyler Higbee's become the safety net for this Rams offense.
There's a hidden gem. Okay, there's your hidden gem.
He's a hidden gem.
Okay.
He has taken, like, everyone talks about Josh Reynolds and him filling in for Cooper Kupp. It's not Josh Reynolds. It's been Tyler Higbee. If you look at the production, Higbee going into week 8 or 9 was kind of a forgotten man in the Ram offense.
Right.
I mean, Gerald Everett was the guy that had speed on, you know, you could line up as a tight end. He's got speed. He can beat you downfield. Not Tyler Higbee. In that Saints game, Higbee had two highly important completions from Jared Goff that set up the game-winning field goal that nobody's talking about.
And Everett made a great play.
He did.
The tight ends, both of them. Yeah, they're not talking. Nobody's really talking about Everett, too.
But Everett's got speed.
Even though he is your starter, nobody's really talking about Gerald Everett.
No.
All the media coverage, hey, Brandon Cooks, Reynolds, Robert Woods, Gurley, Goff. But Everett, there's another one. What about the Patriots? Who's not getting talked about as somebody who can change this game?
I don't think James White gets enough pub at all. I love James White.
James White's amazing.
I love watching him play. And it's funny to me, I guess because Rex Burkhead scored the game-winning touchdown, I guess that's why we're talking about him. But based off what I saw from the Rams defensively, and I thought Wade Phillips did great adjusting off Alvin Kamara, to me, James White can kill you out of the backfield.
Absolutely.
You saw it firsthand.
Oh, I watched it live and in color being a Chargers homer. He was dominant. He had 15 catches that game. Okay. Yeah, that's a good
one.
To
me, those would be the two. And I guess Kyle Van Noy, again, I'm going to mention him, and I know BYU fans love hearing it, but the fact is, with the Rams running outside zone, New England's going to send a blitz up the middle, right? That's how you beat that.
Yes.
You got to send a middle blitz.
Van Noy's going to be
electric.
Van Noy's
going to
be electric. Yeah, he's
going
to be electric. Him and Hunt Hightower have to be electric for them to be there. I'm going to tell you, my hidden gem for New England's going to be Marcus Cannon.
Okay.
The right tackle. I'm going to tell you why.
Okay.
Because Sue and Donald are so dominant. They're going to take up blockers and different things like that. If Cannon has trouble one-on-one with Fowler, the Patriots are going to be in trouble. because you're going to have to double-team Aaron Donald, and if Sue takes over, you're going to have to chip. You're going to have to do some different things. And if Cannon has to help with Ndamukong Suh, then Dante Fowler is going to be one-on-one. So I think that Marcus Cannon is going to be huge. If he can handle Fowler one-on-one and they get help inside, Tom Brady's going to have time, and it's going to be a bad day for the Rams. So I think Marcus Cannon's the hidden gem.
Let me ask
Patriots.
You this about Marcus Cannon, though. What are the odds, and I think we're going to see it a lot, that Cannon has to line up man-to-man with Ndamukong Suh?
I think
you see that a lot.
Yeah, you're going to see that a lot, and that would be huge, because if he can't handle Sue, and Sue gets into Brady's face, makes him step up, he step up into what? Aaron Donald, who might be the most dominant.
Rogers, right.
Aaron Donald's like amazing. Amazing. So Marcus Cannon is a hidden gem for me for the Patriots. And for the Rams, I think it's going to be Johnny Johnson. Because me and you have already talked about the linebackers for the Rams are going to have to be amazing. Mm-hmm. And I think everybody should know that, because James White and Burkhead are amazing. So it's going to be a major matchup. But I think that John Johnson can change the game. If he handles Gronk, or even keeps Gronk average, you know, even if he gives up four catches, that makes a huge difference, because you can adjust your scheme to help on the running backs.
So are you bringing, if you're Wade Phillips, and we're talking about what the Rams have to do defensively here, because I kind of view Mark Barron as being that X factor. He's a hybrid.
This guy
that played safety.
Yeah, he's a nickel linebacker, really.
He is. Are you bringing Johnson over the top? Are you doubling Gronk in this game? Because I could see that happening. I keep seeing the statistic. Tom Brady hasn't been sacked in the playoffs, and that's a tremendous.
That's a tremendous.
It is.
Yeah.
But he's not going downfield.
He's not going downfield.
I mean, we're talking, he's able to get the ball out of his hand
absolutely
in 2 seconds. Because it's intermediate. Everything's underneath the
seven,
defense.
Six, five,
right.
You know, things like that. I don't know. You know, if it was me, I would make him beat me deep. I would force him to hold the ball and throw it deep. So if I'm Wade Phillips, I would blitz, go man coverage. I wouldn't go man coverage, excuse me. I would not go man coverage. I'd stay zoned behind the blitz. But I would do a combination of both. And I tell you what, if John Johnson can just keep Gronk, say in check, four catches, 50 yards, you'll take it all day. Because I think if Peters and Tlaib get their hands on the receivers for the Patriots, and Tom Brady has to hold the ball, he has to tap the ball and go from read one to read two to read three, it's over. Donald and Sue and Fowler, they will get there.
There's no question.
Now, the Chargers didn't do it. The Chiefs didn't do it. They didn't make him get off his spot. And he didn't throw the ball downfield against either of them. And the Rams are going to have to do that. They're going to have to change it up where he has to hold the ball and show them, hey, I can beat you deep. Make him do it. Make Brady do that, because if he has time and it's first read, 6 yards, he's going to surgically go right down the field.
So let me ask you this. Is it asinine to think about going single high man defense? Because I know the Rams have two great safeties. LaMarcus Joyner's on a contract year. And on top of that, you got John Johnson.
Yeah, it's a single high, yeah. Yeah. Keep everything in front of, you know, I would. I'd force that issue and squeeze the field and make Brady throw it down the field. That's how I would beat him. Because if he's got to hold that ball, I like my chances. I think Donald's going to get there. I think Sue and Fowler are going to get there. So compress the field and make them beat you deep. Because I don't think Tlaib's going to, you know, I don't think Edelman, Dorsett can run a little bit.
He can get up.
But Hogan and Edelman, they're not going to run by Peters and Tlaib.
No.
And if they get their hands on him, that's a good matchup for you. So make him beat you deep and with your single high man. I would like to see that. You know, force the action.
Let me throw one more guy out there for the Patriots that I think needs to show up. We were dead on with Sammy Watkins, by the way, with the Kansas City Chiefs.
We needed
something from Sammy Watkins.
Yeah.
What about Chris Hogan in this game?
He's been pretty silent, and he can be
all year. He's been silent.
Yeah, he has. He needs to step up, because give it up to Marcus Peters. I'm not a fan. But he did play better against New Orleans.
He backed up his talk.
He did. But he's had a rough year. Now, Tlaib has helped. And I don't know if Wade has him switch sides or follow in man coverage. It's going to be, like I said, I'm just ecstatic, just waiting to see what Wade Phillips does with his defensive game plan. But if Peters has Peters has emotional issues. We all know it. The whole world knows it. So if Hogan beats him early and Peters gets off his game, you're right, Hogan could change this whole game. Another hidden gem. Because Peters, if he gets off his game, he's a mess.
And I think you are right when you say Aqib Tlaib helps.
Absolutely.
Look, there's championship experience there.
Oh, absolutely.
And Aqib Talib just connects with Marcus Peters. I mean, when you go out and you grab Peters, it only made sense to acquire a guy like Aqib Talib.
Yeah,
I mean, that was strategically placed.
It has to
grab
be
a guy like that.
Peters is high maintenance. Peters needs guidance. Peters is a mess, for lack of a better word. And they've done a good job, for the most part, controlling him. And he had his real trouble when Talib was injured.
Right.
That's when he had real
because
trouble.
One of the things that I think people forget about Marcus Peters, based on the fact that this guy has had so much success as far as the flashy plays, the pick sixes, he's not a burner, Vinny. He runs
no,
like
not
4
all.
540.
Not all, and he gets beat a lot.
He does.
He makes a lot of great plays, but he got beat a lot.
The same thing in Kansas City.
In Kansas City, absolutely. He made great plays, but he gave up plays. So Talib has help, but yeah, that's an interesting... Like I said, I'm just waiting to see how this is going to play out. I just can't wait to see how the Rams attack the Patriots. And this is going to be an amazing game. We have great kickers. We haven't talked about special teams. We talked about special teams last week.
We did.
And two great kickers. Two great punters.
Two great punters, yeah.
JoJo Natson's done a good job as a returner for the Rams.
Yeah, he has.
He has. He's a solid returner. And Cordarrelle Patterson's amazing.
Well, Cordarrelle Patterson is a guy that I can't believe he's bounced around as much as he had, because remember coming out of college, the raw talent that Cordarrelle Patterson had?
Oh.
He just looked the part. And you mentioned JoJo Natson. Here's how good JoJo's been. Farrell Cooper was a Pro Bowler last year on special teams. They cut him in favor of JoJo Natson.
He got cut. He didn't get his job back after he came back from injury. So there are so many even matchups here. It's going to be... and I'm hoping for a great game. I really am. And I honestly don't know who I would pick. I'm still on the fence of who I'm going to pick to win this game, Jordan. I don't know.
But I want
a great game.
Well, I know exactly what you're saying, and I'm just going to say this. 9 out of 10 times, I pick the best team to win. And I have no doubt in my mind, 1 through 53, the Rams are a better team than the New England Patriots.
Yeah.
And I said this when the Patriots played the Chargers. I have no doubt in my mind that 1 through 53, the Chargers are better. I don't know about Kansas City, but looking at the Chargers 1 through 53, they are better. It does not matter when you play the Patriots.
It doesn't matter when you play the Patriots. That is correct, because it's a different animal. They've never seen it before, so the mystique does matter now. I honestly don't know. Like, I believe you 100%. I think the Rams 1 through 53 have more talent. They have more speed. I think they're a better football team, talent-wise.
I do, too.
But every time I say this is the time the Patriots are going to get beat, they make me look silly. So I honestly don't know. I'm rooting for the Rams. I'm going to be honest with you. I've always liked the LA Rams. I watched them as a kid live. But I don't know. I still don't know. I'm rooting for the Rams.
It's hard to pick against Belichick and Brady. It is.
I am rooting for the Rams.
Let's break for just a moment. When we come back, this is what I want to talk about when we return. How does Todd Gurley get used in this game? Because everyone's talking about C.J. Anderson right now, and he's been great over the last month.
He has been great.
You can't forget that the most explosive offensive player in football, one of the top three most explosive players in football, it's Todd Gurley.
Yep.
I think you got Antonio Brown. You got to throw him in the conversation.
Yep.
You have Todd Gurley. Explosiveness. That's what I'm talking about. How does McVay use Todd Gurley? We'll talk about that when we return here on Drive Time Sports.
Live from the KOAL newsroom at Price, Utah, it's Drive Time Sports on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Take that for data.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, set to wrap up Football Tuesday. And I posed the question before we went to that last commercial break. Todd Gurley, I don't think you can... not talk about this storyline enough. Vinny, at one point in time, Todd Gurley was pegged to be the MVP of the league, and rightfully so.
Yeah, he was dominant.
Throughout the majority of the year, and then he got dinged up a little bit, and I think it was obvious when Todd Gurley went down with the injury, it was obvious. And so the Rams, who had Malcolm Brown, who was the perfect compliment to Todd Gurley, right? Malcolm Brown's a good running back. You and I had discussed the two best 1-2 duos in the league, with Le'Veon Bell being out. You got to take Connor and Bell out of the equation. It may, in fact, be Gordon and Eckler in L.A. and Gurley and Brown in L.A. I like the dynamic.
Absolutely.
I mean, really.
Absolutely.
So Malcolm Brown goes down. The Rams have to release Farrell Cooper, who we talked about earlier, was a Pro Bowl returner. And they go out and they get C.J. Anderson. C.J. Anderson was a guy that when he played for the Broncos had, He had some great moments with the Broncos.
Yeah, he had a 1,000-yard season. Yeah, 1,000-yard season. So it was a solid veteran running back.
It was, exactly, a solid veteran running back. When you look at the fact that the Panthers did not use him, the Raiders had him and did not use him. And so it was just it was odd that you're releasing a Pro Bowl returner in Ferrell Cooper because you have to have a running back. You have to. C.J. Anderson comes on the scene. He's been amazing. Against the Cardinals, he goes for 100 yards. Against the Niners, he goes for 100 yards. You say, okay, he's doing it against two lesser NFC West teams. Does it against the Cowboys. And then he plays the majority of snaps against the Saints.
Very interesting.
What's going on with Todd Gurley? And how does that impact Super Bowl 53?
Well, I'll tell you, we've talked about so many different things, and you could talk about the Super Bowl for months, really. This is going to be so amazing, this matchup. But in talking about Wade Phillips, all these other things, the one guy that can really take the game over is Todd Gurley.
Mm-hmm.
He can literally, if he's healthy and he's right, he came out, just yesterday or the day before saying, hey, I stunk. I'm healthy. I didn't play a good game against the Saints.
He says he's healthy.
I'm healthy, and I didn't play a good game against the Saints. If he comes on, and he's dynamic, he could really take this game over, Jordan. He could change the entire game. He could be the one guy in this game that takes it over and could be the most important player on the field.
You go back to the game against Denver, who's got a pretty good defense, right?
Yeah, good defense.
He runs for 208 yards in that game. We take a look at Green Bay. He rushes for over 100 yards and had close to 100 receiving yards.
Yeah, because he can do everything.
He can do everything.
He can go outside, inside. He can line up in the slot.
And we did talk about Matt Patricia and what he did against the Rams in Detroit. Gurley went for 140 in that game, if I remember right. So when you talk, I don't think you can. This may be the most intriguing storyline of all.
It might be. And I really believe, not Tom Brady or Jared Goff, if Gurley's healthy, he might be the most important player on the field. Because I think he changes everything. If he's healthy and he's explosive, if that knee is healthy and he's not kind of, he looked a little, to me, he looked half a step down.
Against New Orleans, he didn't against Dallas. He looked good against Dallas.
Yeah, he looked good against Dallas, but against New Orleans, he looked half a step down. Was it nerves? Was it, I don't know, but he had a bad day. It happens to everybody. Everybody has a bad day. So if he comes out and he's dynamite and he's right, it could change the game, Jordan. I think he's one of the most important players on the field.
So we could talk about targets and who Tom Brady wants to target, who Jared Goff wants to target. The most underlooked stat for any receiver, and I don't care if we're talking about a running back here, this applies to Todd Gurley. The most underrated stat is catch percentage off your targets.
Absolutely.
That's the most important stat.
That is the most important thing. That means, every time he throws it to you, you catch it this amount of times.
Exactly. This season, Todd Gurley has had 5 games where he's caught 100% of his targets.
That's incredible.
Okay. But against New Orleans, it was 33%. That is such a huge drop-off, and one of them turned out to be a turnover inside their own 20-yard
line. 3 points. Yeah, he gave them 3 points.
He gave them three points. And that was by far the lowest this season. The second lowest, I guess, I'm almost certain it would have been against Chicago, which the whole offense.
And he wasn't right.
He wasn't right in that game.
No,
he wasn't healthy
right
at that stage. And so you go back to Dallas, he was very good out of the backfield as a receiver. So Gurley as a runner or Gurley as a receiver, who's more important in this game?
Runner. And I'll tell you why. I believe that if the Rams control line of scrimmage and Gurley gets 20 rushes and C.J. Anderson gets 10 rushes, they're winning. If McVay runs the ball 30 times, Rams win the game.
I think they're unbeaten when Gurley has more than 16 carries.
Because if they're running the ball, they're going to win. So I think as a runner, now as a receiver, again, he's dynamic. He'd do both. The guy's amazing. So if he's right, you can catch it. But I really believe if the Rams are running the ball, it'll set everything up. If they have a great run game, they're going to play action. They can control the chains, stay in front of the chains, down and distance, time. So many different factors go into this, especially if they get a lead and Tom Brady wants to dink and dunk. Hey, that takes a lot of time off the clock. That's eating possessions. And if the Rams can steal some possessions by eating clock, running the ball, having success at it, I think they win the game. If they're running the ball well, Jordan, I'm taking the Rams. I think the Rams win.
We could talk about this all day.
Yeah,
we could talk about this
all day.
Unfortunately, we are out of time. NASCAR Live is coming up next. Vinny, it's always a pleasure to get you in for Football Tuesday.
Love being here.
I got to throw this out there. Before we end, we got some great guests lined up. We're going to talk to Leonard Marshall.
Awesome.
The week. How great
is that?
That's
awesome, dude. Leonard Marshall, underrated, great player.
Talking about a 2-time Super Bowl champ that basically ended the Joe Montana era in San Francisco, was a part of that dynamic New York Giants Super Bowl squad, won 2 Super Bowls with the Giants, and Bill Belichick was his defensive coordinator. That's coming up on the show tomorrow. He's Vinny Rondinelli. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We are out.